The Talk of the Northwest. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme. It is Tuesday, the 24th of March, 2026, and we do have a very busy show for you between now and 11 o'clock. Lots coming up. We want you involved in the conversation throughout, of course. Let me remind you of the contact details. Your WhatsApps and texts come into us on 086 6025000, 086 6025000. You can give us a call on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Yes, as we were mentioning just before the news there, prices at the pump are to be cut, but as I was also saying to Lee, the amount that they're likely to be cut by seems to have gone on in the last day or two. So what are we going to have them reset to? Sunday, Saturday? Do you know what I mean? It's not going to come under €2 a litre for diesel in any case, it looks like. But anyway, let's read on. We'll start with the Irish Daily Mail this morning as we go through the newspapers, as we do every morning. The price of petrol and diesel are to be slashed as part of a package set to be announced today by the government to deal with the increased cost of oil, with diesel now at over 2.10, but as I say, I've saw it at 2.25 this morning. But with diesel now over 2.10 at some filling stations around the country, the government met last night to agree a time-limited package. Government sources were keen to stress the limited nature of the package, which is expected to cost around €240 million, but acknowledged that they had to move on the matter despite Donald Trump announcing a five-day pause on a tax in Iran yesterday. A tax rebate scheme for hauliers, a reduction in excise duty to cut fuel prices, and a reduction to zero of the National Oil Reserve Agency, that's NORA levy, were all agreed by coalition leaders. So as I say, though, it remains to be seen how quickly it comes down. They're referencing a ceasefire that Donald Trump announced. Iran said it's fake news. They say there's no negotiations ongoing at all. And really, the sense is that, well, actually, before I mention that, there was some really strange dealings done yesterday in terms of exchanging and selling and of stocks and what have you. People obviously may have had prior knowledge that Donald Trump was to announce this ceasefire. As it turns out, Iran says, look, we never agreed to anything. But obviously oil dropped, and you can bet that oil will drop, and you can also invest in other areas, and billions of euro was invested, if I could put it to you like that, just in the moments before he made that announcement. So lots of people made lots and lots of money. But when will the price of your fuel come down? Well, the government has been advised, this is in the Irish Independent, not to announce petrol and diesel will be cheaper at filling stations around the country from tomorrow morning after it cuts excise duty on fuel. The change, which is expected to come into effect from midnight tonight, may not be allocated or reflected in prices at the pumps for up to a week, the industry says. While big petrol stations with a high throughput of fuel could pass on the price change within hours, smaller stations that receive deliveries less frequently could take several days. Kevin McPartland, Chief Executive of Fuels for Ireland, a representative body for firms that import and distribute oil products, says he's advised the government not to promote that fuel prices will go down at midnight, which is pretty much what I said to Lee there. It just depends on when they refuel the big tanks that they have. And just staying with the cost of the war in the Middle East, it's not just petrol and diesel and home heating oil. The war in the Middle East could add $700 a year to the gross to the average grocery bill. Grocery prices are set to soar by up to 10% due to the war in the Middle East, retail expert Damien O'Reilly said. This would see families having to spend up to €700 or more a year to feed themselves. Mr. O'Reilly, a senior lecturer in retail management at TU Dublin, said higher oil prices feed into higher grocery prices with a lag of a few months, because obviously these materials are so critical in the production of all manner of things that contribute to food production as a whole. Right, okay. Anything to say in relation to that? Maybe you could give us an idea of what the fuel prices are around the country today, or around the county, should I say. What petrol and diesel prices are you seeing, or have you seen on your journeys? Let us know, and we can kind of then track how long it takes for them to come down the 20 cent, which seems to be the figure that's being bandied around. well, getting on the road, this story comes and it goes and it comes and it goes. So remember the last time we were talking about average driving test wait times and the government was promising to do this, that and then to bring them down. Well, unfortunately, the average driving test wait rises to 12 weeks. The story's actually worse in Donegal, and I'll get to that in a moment. Learner drivers in Dunlera, County Dublin, are waiting 21 weeks for a driving test, the longest waiting time in the state and more than twice the 10-week national target. So keep that in mind. The national target is 10 weeks. The average waiting time to be called for a test nationally has risen from 10 to 12 weeks since the target was reached last September. The latest data shows there were 5,356 people waiting for tests in Dunlera last month, which local Fine Gael TD Barry Ward described as an extraordinary number. Since January 2025, it's never been lower than 4,500 people waiting for tests, he said. So what is the situation in Donegal? So this is when you've jumped through all the hoops and you are invited to book a test. Well, in Buncrana, Inishowen, it is 15 weeks, which for a long time kind of had a longer waiting time than the rest of Donegal, but it's at 15 weeks. So it's it's 3 weeks above the national time. Letterkenny, 16 weeks. So once you're invited for a test, you'd be waiting 4 months to sit that test. And that means also long waiting times for retests as well, if you happened to fail. And in Donegal Town, 18 weeks. That's how long you would have to wait now. So that's a long, long time, isn't it? That's 4.5 months in Donegal Town, 4 months in Letterkenny, and just slightly better in Inishowen, 15 weeks out of the Buncrana office. So all three offices in Donegal far and above the 12-week average, and far and above, and in Donegal Town's situation, almost double the national target. So it always seems to affect us worse up here for some reason or other. A big week for football, soccer, of course. Ireland in the playoffs for the World Cup later this year. And tickets for the biggest Ireland game in a decade were last night being advertised online for an eye-watering €83,505. Is that for real? I don't know. I mean, obviously the paper has seen them for that price, but it doesn't make any sense. And when taxes and fees were added in, the total bill for two soars to 238,000. In fact, almost 239,000. Fan fever is building as Czechia hosts the boys in green at the Fortuna Arena in Prague. The Fortuna Arena in Prague in a crunch World Cup playoff semi-final match this Thursday. If Ireland can triumph, they will be rewarded with a home final in Dublin next Tuesday against the winners of Denmark and North Macedonia. So there's still two games to go before we know where we're at. And that's best case. There could be one game and we'll know we're not going. But apparently tickets, 239,000 for two tickets. I mean, no one's that rich to spend that, are they? And finally, I was listening to Lee's show this morning. He played Chapel Roan, which, of course, he does regularly. And why wouldn't he? She's a hugely popular singer. But she's in a controversial scenario at the moment. Irish singer Catherine Harding has said a security guard berated her and her daughter after an encounter with US singer Chapel Roan. Harding's husband, ex-Chelsea footballer Jorginho, 34, criticised Roan on Instagram on Saturday after he said her security spoke in an extremely aggressive manner to his wife and daughter when they saw the pop star at a hotel in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Jorginho, is that how you pronounce his name? I'm not familiar with this guy at all, who now plays for Flamengo in Rio de Janeiro, said that the incident made his 11-year-old cry and left her extremely shaken. So, I mean, it's not Chapel Roan herself, but I think you have to remember the people that got you famous in the first place, because that star doesn't shine forever. And you'll be glad of people coming up to you at some point or other into the future. We're going to return to the very important issue of the Buncrana Community Hospital, delay after delay. We don't really know what's going on at this stage. There seems to be a vacuum in terms of usable information, but people are very concerned about this, quite rightly so. I've a number of guests to talk about this. I'm going to start with Maureen Lochry, Tolly of the Inish Theatre Group, who organised a recent protest about the delays in the Buncrana Community Hospital. And there's a great deal of concern, Maureen, isn't there?
There is indeed, Greg, yeah. I was approached last week by Tracy Murphy, and Tracy has been lobbying now since last year. Her mum was one of the parents that was in availing of the respite in the Bone Cranna Nursing Unit, and Tracy just said to me, will you help me, because I feel like I'm coming up against a brick wall, and I'm not just here from the capacity of any theatre. My own mum is also a resident in the Bone Cranna Nursing Unit. Now, she is one of the acute patients, so she has stayed there, but they've been moved down to the Ash ward. But again, the facilities are not, they're not what they should be, even for visitors and stuff. It's just not right. I mean, they were just rushed out nearly overnight last May because we were told, right, the renovations are starting in the next couple of weeks, patients are being moved, everything was up in the air, and we're now into March, end of March of 2026, and it's been delayed again.
Tracy, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks for joining us. Your mum, as mentioned by Maureen there, was in the Bone Cranna unit. What impact has this had? Firstly, what happened to your mother, and what impact is it having on you and her and the family?
Well, she has dementia, and she would be gone for respite every 6 weeks, which my father's her main care. He's 81. So when my mother was down in the nursery, it was great. My father could walk down, good day, you know, take her outside and different stuff. But now Mammy has been moved. Now, we are fortunate that she has been moved to the Nazareth House. It's not that far away. But Daddy has to drive, like he's 81. You know, he's to drive now to see her. He can't take her up the street a walk, you know, if he was doing visiting her and stuff like that. So when you go, you're tied to there. But now it is a great facility and all the rest, but the community hospital was so, so good. Mm. You know, and like I have a friend too, and her mother was on there. She doesn't drive. Her mother was sent, she lives actually beside, her home house would be beside the nursing unit. She was removed to a home in Remelton. She doesn't drive. She gets the bus twice a week from Bone Cranna to Letterkenny, gets to Letterkenny, and then gets a taxi out to the home. She has four sisters that live nearby, and they haven't seen her in the last 4 months because they have no lift. It's shocking.
Yeah, it's really, really difficult. And your mother was moved effectively to facilitate the upgrading of this facility. Yeah. That's what you were told. And yet here we are. There's no start date. There's no contractor in place even. There's no answers. And yet, you know, I don't want to be overly dramatic, but, you know, there's time and experiences that is being taken from your mum and dad at the moment.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, without. I don't know. It's just we need clarification, you know. Oh, it's going. They were rushed out. It was going to start in April, May. But here we are now, coming into April again, and there's been nothing.
Maureen, of course, there's now less beds than there were. There's issues not just with the type of care we're talking of in Tracy's context, but respite care. It's not really fair in the families. It's not fair in the community. And yet it's very difficult to get any answers as to where we're at and where we're going.
Well, that's the problem, Greg. We're coming up against a brick wall all the time. We're not getting any answers. And we're not, you know, Dermot Monaghan was invited down to a protest march, or a representative from the HSE. They didn't come. They're not answering our emails. They're not answering our letters. Well, we're being told now that he's off on annual leave. But as of the 12th of March, when Tracy was able to find out on the 12th of March that these works were being delayed yet again, he was still putting out word in his meetings that it was going ahead in the first quarter. So there's something badly wrong there. And yes, it is. It's the impact that it's having on the wider, you know, it's not just the impact on the families, it's the impact on the patients, it's the impact on the staff. That is a 32-bed hospital. We're down to 11 beds. The overflow went to Carndonagh and the Nazareth House. They're now at full capacity, so they're also struggling. And there's people that are waiting on respite care between 10 and 16 weeks, and they're supposed to get it every 6 weeks. That's a lifeline for families, you know, and we're getting no answers.
Okay, listen, I know you've another appointment. Thank you very much for joining us. The other ladies are going to stay with us, though. Another lady that I haven't said hello to yet is Elizabeth Ann Nelson. Elizabeth, thank you for your time as well.
You're very welcome, Greg. You're very welcome.
What's your situation? What's your situation? You tell us the story.
Mammy did avail of the respite there, and we used to be able to wheel her over to the Buncrana nursing unit. No, it was just 3 minutes walk for us, you know, and for her and her wheelchair. She availed of it and she loved it. She absolutely adored it. Mammy's, there was two men in Buncrana that approached my uncle, two local men, Frank Callaghan and Dr. Dennis McLaughlin. They approached my uncle and asked, would he sell them a small bit of land for to build a nursing home for old people, which his own parents were elderly, so he thought definitely he would, and he sold it to them for a pittance. Okay? But he did say, but it was only word of mouth, he did say, if a bed was ever needed for an O'Donnell, one would be available. Okay? My mother is the last of the O'Donnell clan. She's 95. Okay? So the respite stopped. Mammy was actually nearly one of the last patients to avail of the respite. Okay? Mm. And as Maureen said, she was almost rushed out because the other long-term patients were moving down to the Ash Ward. That was grand. We waited long and hard on respite for Mammy. Okay, Greg, and we did get it in Cairn, but it was every 12 weeks. Mm. There was just myself and my sister were caring for Mammy. And that took its toll, you know, like every 12 weeks just is not good enough. Mammy also helped open up that nursing unit because Frank Callaghan and Dr. Dennis approached her and says, will you please go down and help us open up, you know, invite any old people that you knew. So she did do. So both Mammy and a lady called Mrs. Maggie McHugh and Mrs. Brady Doherty and other local women rode in behind her and they got it opened. Mm-hmm. Now, it's open now. It's open now almost over 40 years. Mammy used to go over and visit the old people who were actually younger than her, okay? She would over to visit them because they didn't have anybody, any visitors. She also did the garden for over 25 years. Mammy's health deteriorated. At this stage, she was 94, and she had to go into the hospital because she had a slight stroke.
Down to Letterkenny.
Up to Letterkenny. Yeah. Now, that, we thought that journey was terrible on her, okay? 94 years of age. We were told up there that she couldn't come home, that she had to go into a home. I tried to get her onto the nursing unit. There was no room. Now, they're running with 11 patients and a full staff. God love the girls. I don't know how they do it. I tried Cairn Donagh. Now, every nursing home has a waiting list. Okay, Mammy was way down the list in Cairn and further down the list for the nursing unit. Beech Hill, Hickwa had them closed for the best part of 6 months, to tell you the truth. We knew that Mammy would get on there. She was a priority, but we needed somewhere for Mammy there and then. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm. We did eventually get her into a nursing home in Remelton.
Wow.
Now, okay. 94 years of age, been taken out of her hometown. There's just me and my sister. She has grandchildren. Most of them are away. They do come whenever they can. But now, 95 years of age, the only person she saw was myself and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And there is another lady up in Remelton from Buncrana, and our family, every time they went in to visit their mammy, they visited my mammy.
But it must have felt like a lifetime between visits, waiting on you or your sister to land down.
Exactly. And she knew nobody.
Mm.
You know, it was heartbreaking. Now, they were so good to her up in Remelton. Mm-hmm. They did.
No, I know that, but it's how she would feel. Three months in Letterkenny University Hospital, it's not a setting designed to have someone in there for 3 months. And I think you did mention that she would have been classed as an inverted commas bed blocker because there was no space for her in the community. So that's tough in and of itself. So then you have to go in and say, "Mommy, we've got a place for you, but it's Remelton." Like, at that stage of your life, it's very distressing. It's distressing at any stage of your life, but she would have been asking questions like, well, when am I going to see you two, or how often are you going to get down, or who's going to...
Exactly. And I contacted a local politician here last March to see what was the holdup. And right enough, he did get back to me, and he says it would be starting in September.
Mm-hmm.
That work... The respite should not have been stopped until the men and the hard hats were there. You know, that's a full year that people like me, like Tracy, like Maureen, like everybody else, that's a full year we're left in limbo. And now,
do you know what's really valuable about this conversation, Tracy and Elizabeth, is that this is the real this is the real life consequences of these decisions. Or the lack of decisions, or the lack of information. These are families we're hearing firsthand what this means, particularly for the people. I feel particularly for your families in these situations. Your mum removed to Remelton. Where is she now?
I said I wasn't going to name anybody.
No, okay. Well, listen, I didn't mean.
No. It's a councillor in the town who helped me get her into Beech Hill, and that councillor is Fionnan Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
He emailed, he tortured, he rang. I rang, I tortured. I don't do emails, but I got her on the month of her 95th birthday. She was on one day. Now, Mammy has dementia, but she said to me, I think I recognise people here.
Oh.
You know, like 6 months away from the town that reared you, from your family, for us. You know, something like that is not good for anybody's mental health.
Mm. It's the fighting, Tracy, as well, isn't it? It's the fighting that having to become campaigners, the letters, the emails, whatever it might be, you know, the phone calls. It's unbelievable that this is what we have to do for what should be your right, I think, especially, you know, when you're an older person.
And we're their voice, do you know what I mean? And if we don't, they're just going to be left lying. But we can only do so much. We need the power of our TDs, our representatives, to fight for us as well. You know, we can shout and we can shout and we can torture, but we need them on board.
Mm.
We are getting no clarification from anybody. You know, for that man, Mr. Monaghan, to sit on the 12th of March, when we got the word to say, no, the work's been delayed, for him to sit and say, no, the work's going ahead. Like, people, we need clarification on this. When is it going to start?
Are either of the two of you have any concerns that there is some talk that even if it goes ahead today, there's not enough capacity for the region?
Definitely.
So what would you think, Elizabeth Ann, do you think we should revisit the plans or say, right, this is the first stage, there needs to be a second stage?
Yeah. Well, go with the first stage with the outlook that the second stage will be built as well, mm-hmm. you know, build more, because like there's nowhere in Inishowen for our elderly or our vulnerable. No place. And like, you know, Greg, our politicians have to come together on this. They have to work together and they have to speak up and don't leave it to the like of myself and Maureen and Tracy. You know, it's not fair. Like, that's what they're elected for. And I know that some people would say, but they don't really have the power. Why did they put themselves forward for? Do something.
Yeah. Yes, because life is busy and, you know, people, you could end up having to deal with your own health issues and yet you're still trying to get a comfortable space for, you know, an elderly parent or whatever the relationship might be. Life shouldn't be this complicated.
Definitely not. And like at 95 or plus 90, you've earned the right to be among your own people.
Mm. Well, aging should be a gift, shouldn't it? You know, grow, it should be a gift.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say thank you. You spoke so well, both of you. Tracy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Elizabeth Ann Nelson, and also we did hear, of course, from a very important lady in this process, Maureen Lochry Tully. Right, a name that was mentioned there, Councillor Fionnuala Bradley. He joins us now. Have you had any success? We were speaking about this extensively on Friday, of course, but it's such a significant story. You can't talk about it enough. Any update from Dermot Monaghan's office in relation to this project? Where are we at?
Well, good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners, and good morning and thank you to the three ladies who spoke so eloquently on behalf of all of Buncrana. On Friday afternoon, Greg, after I was on your show, I received an email from Dermot Monaghan's office informing me that he was on annual leave and that he would be back this week, and at that stage his office would revert back to me to arrange a meeting with ourselves to drive this project on. Now, I should say that I had to send two emails last week. We had the protest on the Saturday, and first thing on Monday morning, I sent an email to Mr. Monaghan, to which I received no reply, and I had to send a second email on Thursday before I got a reply telling me that he was on annual leave. So even that wasn't acceptable. At the very, very least, I should have received an interim reply telling me that that he was on annual leave and wasn't available. So, unfortunately, since the protest, I don't have anything positive to report because I haven't had an opportunity to sit down with him, or at this stage, any other senior official in the HSE will not be fussy about who we get around the table.
Okay, just I sometimes presume everyone knows exactly where we're at. So while I have you, can we recap the timeline? So, our understanding of this new facility, when it was going to start, and then we heard what delays we heard of. Can you just run through that timeline for me again? Not specific days and months, but just to give the broader audience an insight.
Yes, no problem. So in May of 2025, my colleagues on the Regional Health Forum were informed that work was to begin on the Buncrana Community Hospital in June 2025. And as the ladies have said, at that stage, the facility was emptied of residents and patients almost overnight. Then September of 25, no work had begun, at which point the HSE said that there had been issues identified with the kitchen and the facility as a result of a HICWA inspection, and that they had to increase the scope of the works so that they had to put it back out to tender with this increased scope. Then on the 7th of November 25, my colleague Minister McConnell received correspondence telling us that work would commence. That was the exact wording in the letter. Work would commence on Buncrana Community Hospital in quarter 1, 2026. And from very early in January, I had been engaging with the HSE, and they were consistently using that line that work was to commence. And then fast forward to the 11th of March this year, 26, almost the end of quarter 1, and we got the letter telling us that we're now at stage 1 of pre-tender approval and that the work would be tendered and would now commence in quarter 3 of 2026. Mm-hmm. And that's the most recent update we have in relation to...
Was a tender ever awarded? And if so, who pulled out or what happened to that?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, Greg, no. But that's what I want clarity on. I can't understand why the HSE could tell us as public representatives that work would commence in quarter 1 and then they wouldn't answer questions about the tender, the date the tender had been released, who the tender had been awarded to. We haven't been able to get answers to any of those pertinent questions. So I have no proof that a tender was ever awarded, even though I have tried to get confirmation of that.
Mm. It'd be bizarre to announce a commencement date or even a commencement period without having a contractor in place.
No question about it. And I mean, Greg, this has been a sorry saga going back to 2019 now, when planning permission was initially approved. We had a 5-year period where absolutely nothing was done. I know we had COVID, but 2024, the planning had to be reapplied for, and it was actually rejected. And then it had to be reapplied for a second time. And I think it was September of 24, the planning was then granted for a second time for the facility. So I know the frustration is coming because of the delays since May of 25, but really and truthfully, this has been rumbling on since the beginning of 2019. And not a thing has been done. Not one single thing has been done in that time.
Okay, a lot of answers, a lot of questions and a lot of answers needed. You'll let us know, of course, when you get contact from Dermot Monaghan. Maybe that's when we'll get some response as well. As, of course, we've been emailing his office, the HSE more generally, extensively trying to get some clarity. But anyway, again, thank you so much to the three ladies and Fionn as well there for their updates in relation to that. And also from the ladies' perspectives, the reality of these decisions and the impact it has on real people. Now, you will be aware, particularly I think if you live around the Remelton area, that there is a lot of speculation about plans for an iPass centre in the historic town. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin has made inquiries in relation to this, of course, off the back of contacts, I presume, and I assume have been made to him. And he joins us on the programme now just for some clarity. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so it does seem a planning application has been put in for a building in Remelton to be used as an iPass centre.
Yeah, there was an advertisement put into one of the papers in Donegal. And then that was reported in the local media forever. So on the back of that, I was contacted by a number of constituents over the weekend. And what I've done over the last year in every one of these instances is I have submitted a query to the Department of Justice. It's called the Community Engagement Team. And they usually respond quickly around queries. So what I ask them is this accurate in this case? It's the Blue Goat in Remelton applying for an accommodation centre for international protection applicants. And the department responded pretty quickly yesterday morning. And not only did they say that, they said three things. First of all, they haven't been offered any accommodation in Remelton. Secondly, they're not looking to have a centre in Remelton, and indeed they went further and said they're not looking for a iPass centre in Donegal, the county of Donegal, at this time. So I thought that was helpful clarification, but I also spoke to senior planner in Donegal County Council yesterday. At this time, a planning application actually hasn't been received, but I would expect that one will be submitted based on the newspaper advertisement.
Yeah, okay, and it is about clarity, isn't it? Because I presume you're trying to fill the vacuum of no information or certain types of information.
Yeah, I can tell you, Greg, over the last year, I have submitted queries, I think maybe three or four at different locations in Letterkenny, two in Buncrana. There was at least one in the Newton Cunningham area, one in Ballyliffin, and now one in Remelton. And every one of those instances, the information that was circulating proved to be incorrect. That the department did not have plans to have a iPass centre. And one of the things that I think is now emerging is that in Donegal, if you calculate the number of Ukrainian refugees and asylum seekers in recent years, Donegal would have taken per head a capita more than any other county, even though we have a humanitarian crisis with defective blocks. And, you know, we have said again and again that that is an unfair burden on Donegal, but also communities were not treated with respect. And it also wasn't fair to asylum seekers. Mm. Like, asylum seekers, we've been put into situations where, you know, where there was tensions in the community, where the welcome wasn't what they, you know, would have hoped for. So the whole thing was wrong from every perspective. But it's clear to me over the last year now that the government haven't advanced any more iPass centres, and I would hope that's going to be the case too in Remelton.
Now, one other thing before I let you go, because we were speaking to you on Friday and fuel prices came into the conversation as well. I'm looking at papers in front of me here from the eyes and ears around the county, fuel stations. Diesel going up effectively 20 cents either this morning or overnight. I'm not saying there's anything dodgy going on, but it looks like if the government does announce a 20 cent per litre reduction in petrol and diesel, that actually all it will do is mean the price of those products falls back to the price people were paying yesterday, rather than, you know, something close to maybe what we might have been paying 2 months ago. I suppose much of this, is it outside of the government's control? What's your reaction to that? I know some of that information is anecdotal, but I'm getting pictures showing the 20 cent, 19, 21 cent difference between yesterday evening and this morning.
Yeah, it's a huge increase. I think it's approaching 50 cents increase in a lot of stations. Now, speaking to the people who run the petrol stations in Donegal, I spoke to quite a few of them, that, you know, they're insisting that they're price takers, so they're, mm-hmm. they're having to, and indeed, a number of them would argue that they're actually making less money now than they were 3 weeks ago when prices were 50 cents cheaper at the pump. The problem is these wholesalers and these huge oil companies, that's where governments seem to be unable to confront the profiteering that's going on. And, I mean, government have taken an initiative. I mean, my initial concern would be around they're going to increase the carbon tax now in May. The home heating oil doesn't seem to be a solution. And, you know, it's just they've taken weeks to get to this point. Mm-hmm. People have been under serious pressure. It's been a real slow burner. They've made probably, they've got to 40, 50 million every week in additional taxes based on these increases. So they're already, is it 120, 130 million that they've gained from this. So,
but just in relation to the wholesalers there, and you're quite right, you know, these petrol and diesel stations often make 6 or 7 cent a litre less with high volume sales. But is it a coincidence? Are the wholesalers tracking what's happening globally and this 20 cent that's gone on in some stations the last day or two since, I suppose, news emerged that an announcement from government was coming on Tuesday? Is it, do you believe they're following sort of the international oil, crude oil prices, or is there a need to investigate exactly why this jump of this amount is happening at this time?
Definitely. I mean, there is somebody making a huge amount of money out there, and obviously it's within these huge energy companies, these wholesalers. It's certainly not the local petrol stations. I know that from talking to enough of them at this stage. I mean, it's not in their interest to have petrol and diesel, they're telling me that their own staff are. I mean, obviously the public are very angry at these price increases, and you know, some of them are taking it out on their staff. That's not right.
No,
I
that
want
shouldn't
to
happen.
Just appeal to people to understand that. Just to understand, it isn't the local petrol station, the people that you know who's responsible for this. They're taking these prices from wholesalers, huge oil companies. And yes, I agree, Greg, it really needs to be looked at by government. They said they were bringing them in, and it, you know, it's only got worse since that. And now this intervention, you know, obviously most people are telling me, I've been contacted by a good few people this morning already, texts and WhatsApp messages saying, for God's sake, it's increased by 50 cent and this is only a 20 cent reduction, and people are watching it going up all the time. So it certainly is going to be a very, very, very big challenge in the weeks ahead.
Very worrying. Okay, thank you very much indeed. That's Sinn Féin Chief Whip and Spokesperson on Fisheries and the Marine Deputy, Padraig McLaughlin there. And just to go back to the information that Deputy McLaughlin received by the Community Engagement Team, this is an organisation or an office that he is able to make inquiries to in relation to IPAS centres. And in relation to, sorry to keep using the word in relation, but specifically focusing on plans for an IPAS centre in Melton, A notice did appear in a local newspaper. B, Donegal County Council has yet to formally receive a planning application. Whether that goes through now or not remains to be seen, and it's up to the applicant to decide that. But the email to Deputy McLaughlin reads, the Community Engagement Team can confirm that the International Protection Accommodation Service has received no offer of accommodation in respect of the Blue Goat Remelton Artisan Food Store, the Keys Remelton, and the department is not examining the property for use. They can add further and confirm that the department is not considering any property offer in Donegal at the moment, and we hope that this is helpful in your work. Okay, so that's pretty clear. But also what we did see is the Donegal County Council planners making decisions in relation to a lot of applications for change of use over the last couple of months as well. Anyway, so I would wait and see. It seems incredibly unlikely that that would go on to be used as an iPass centre, but I don't live in the area. I wouldn't be affected by it. And you might say, well, that's easy for you to say, but that's just my gut feeling. Well done to the girls. All local topics well put across. It's a total disgrace what's happening with the nursing unit in Bunkrana. Come on, we'll just have to do what Paddy Diver did for the defective concrete block people. Have a revolution, go out in our thousands and not stop until something is done. Yeah, it is. And it's a perfect reminder too of what we are. And that is a platform for these amazing local voices as well, whether it's on the issue of the nursing units or whatever else it might be. That's what we're here for. And we appreciate the ladies coming on and using that platform to get their message across. On fuel prices, lots of you texting in. Many of the stations have increased the prices above the reductions introduced. This means even when the reductions happen, they'll still be making a profit. And if you go back and listen to the podcast of Friday's show, this is exactly what I said would happen, that the increases would, the reductions would be completely absorbed by increases, because it happens all too often. Now, I'm getting some quotes of diesel prices around the country in Inishowen, 236 and 245 this morning. So take 20 cent off that, and it's still well in excess of €2 a litre. I asked for people to send in what they're seeing, and that was two observations from Inishowen. Greg, the government are patting themselves on the back with the cut in fuel prices. Surely they have that money already in the kitty from the highest price of fuel since the 28th of February, and the government takes so much tax on every litre of fuel, they say. In our area, it was 209 for diesel. Half an hour later, it jumped to 224. It's unbelievable how multinational companies can fleece people. The Irish have lost any fight left in them. Our children and grandchildren will live in a world of poverty as a result. So between the announcement, and as I say, don't have a go at your local retailer. They are price takers, as Deputy McLaughlin has said. I've spoken to many of them as well. The amount they make on petrol and diesel is not huge. And it's the wholesalers that are saying, right, your tank is now such and such. And they have to obviously break that down and charge it per litre. But in this one area, jumped from 209 to 224 in the space of half an hour. The government are as low as a snake's belly, says this listener. 22 cents on diesel. This is an insult to the people of Ireland. They are as bad as the government that are at war. Only this government is putting war on its own people. Good morning, Greg. Thank you for explaining about the fuel prices not necessarily coming down tomorrow morning. As I work at a filling station and not looking forward to the abuse I will get tomorrow. Let me just reiterate that, by the way. If a fuel company just happened to fill their tanks today, they're doing it at the old rate of tax, and that is the price at which they have to sell it until those supplies are exhausted and they get a new consignment in. Some of the busy stations, they're getting it every 2 or 3 days. So that more expensive petrol and diesel has to go through the pumps into cars, and when they restock, that is when. Now, some will restock tonight or very early in the morning, and you'll see the reduction then, but others not. One place in Letterkenny, it's well known for being cheaper than most. 209 yesterday, this morning, 225 for diesel. The price gone up before it comes down, they say. But we're being told this is wholesalers that are doing this. The same thing happened last time at the war in Ukraine. Support measures went into place, but the day before they kicked in, prices went up as the measures were effectively useless. Another, I drive 4 hours a day to and from work. Where's the measures to help the cost on me? I wouldn't like to be in that situation, because this is a big chunk of whatever you might make in a week. A big chunk out of that going towards just getting to and from work. Geez, Greg, have a little bit of sympathy when not getting answers. A lot of jet lag this week. Are these the same people who told us they were in negotiations for Skull Ishigan National School in 2011? Its extension. It's now 26 and it's still not finished. I think there's a bit of tongue-in-cheek action going on there. Listen, keep your calls, comments, requests, whatever it might be coming into us. We appreciate them all and read them all. And most of them make it to air if we have time.
The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio. Text WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Call 074 91 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com.
Right. Thank you so much to all of you messaging the programme or calling us. A caller says, the people of Buncrana will go in their hundreds to Dermot Monaghan's office. We are no messers. We need them to cooperate with us. Another, my car insurance is up this week and it's doubled in price. I can't afford to tax my car for the year, so I'm penalised for doing it for 3 months. More costs. 3 hours to and from work. Cost of petrol is up. I live in an estate that's full of defective blocks. I haven't tested mine because I can't afford to do anything about it. It certainly appears that anyone who works in this country is worse off, but anyone who sits on benefits is much better off. And I know where you're coming from, and I won't make my usual comments in relation to that, but there's lots of people struggling in different conditions and on different incomes and in different work statuses. And, you know, I'd be angry at the insurance company. I'd be angry at those that are driving the price of petrol, personally speaking. Car insurance, shop around, please. It shouldn't double unless you've had a claim. It really, really shouldn't double. And also, I really agree with you. And no one's ever really took me on about the fact that it is the state that charges interest on paying tax every 3 or 6 months. So effectively, if you pay for the year, it's a certain price. If you pay every 3 months, there's a premium on top of that, which is really unfair. And it's been a bugbear of mine for a long, long time, especially as sometimes you don't think your car might last as long as a year, or you might change it, or in fact that maybe you simply can't afford to tax it for the year. You shouldn't be penalised by the government itself, I don't think, for paying in on your car tax like that. It's always annoyed me. €2.40 in some places in Inishowen today. That must be for diesel. The government waited knowing that would happen. I don't know how tuned in they are to the prices. Boycott them, go to the north, 209 to 224 in our town. Another 219 at a local station, and 2 minutes up the road, it's 218. The thing about going to the north, that suits some people. Their tax regime is different. But for the majority of people listening to this programme, by the time you went to and from the north, anything you would have saved would have been burnt into the atmosphere, I'd imagine. Another on this, the recent announcement of fuel reduction is a complete joke and an insult to the Daily Punter. All the petrol stations did a preemptive strike by hiking them from the already high 209 to 219, 220. So when the reduction comes into play, it's back to 209 and above again, a farcical at best. Again, the petrol stations are price takers, in fairness to them, and the anger maybe needs to go towards the wholesalers. Why is there such a lack of talk from our local representatives talking about the price of fuel? Apart from Piers Doherty in Donegal, I haven't heard a single other representative say a thing. It's very unacceptable. Why are we electing these people? A caller says, I live in the Ballybuffet area. Last Friday between 10 and 11 in a housing estate on the Donegal Road, there were four young men in a white van. They wanted to clean gutters, etc. They were suspicious and residents were concerned due to the rise in oil thefts. A young teenager answered the door. He reported it to Gardaí. He did not have the registration of the van. I want others to be aware of suspicious activity in the area. And I want to play a request for Barney McFadden, who's in Falkara. A very happy 85th birthday to you, Barney, from all of your family. And we hope you have a wonderful day. Right, now, I'm joined on the programme by Frank Morning, who's an avid blood donor. Good morning to you, Frank.
Good morning, Greg.
And when you say avid, how many times you've donated blood now?
Well, I'm actually at, I was on there last night, so I have 102 given now.
That's amazing, so isn't it?
I gave 100 there about the summertime last year, but I have two more given since. I was on last night there, so I'm at 102 now.
And you first started giving blood just as you turned an adult at the age of 18. But it was a wee bit different back then, Frank.
It was a bit different back then. They used to collect the blood at the community centre there in Letterkenny. And you'd get, see, whenever you donate there, you'd even, you get a bottle of Guinness. If you wanted a Guinness, you could get a bottle of Guinness after you donated. You got tea and coffee and refreshments and stuff like that. But there was a bottle of Guinness there as well, so it might encourage some people to give it, all right. I never took the Guinness myself now because I don't drink, but it was there. There was a bottle of Guinness, but Nowadays, there are no Guinness available.
No, I don't think so. And Frank, why do you think it's so important to give blood? As I say, for someone who's done it 102 times, you obviously, you know, really see the benefit for others.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I started giving it. My father used to get blood because he had a problem with his stomach and he had to get blood different times. So once I was 18, I decided I was going to go and give it. And there's some of my mates as well, and a couple of my brothers went as well. So we all went, and it was, we look forward to it. You know, once you get started it, you kind of get into the run of it. You look forward to it. And I never missed it unless if you have a flu or a cold or something like that, you can't give it. Mm-hmm. But if I could at all, I always went to it, you know. And some of my own family now goes, three of my own family there gives it now as well. And actually, my son Joseph, he was on with me last night, and he got a pin for his 10th, so he is 10 given.
Well done
and
to him.
I think it's a very good thing. It's a very good thing to do because people never knows when somebody belonging to them or themselves needs blood. Mm. You know what I mean? They need blood for operations and for treatment of cancer and other things as well. So if people's not given the blood, there'll be no blood there for people to get. You know, so yeah. Somebody has to go in and give that blood. And they come around there, the blood transfusion service is actually in the Radisson Hotel this week. And when we started, it used to just come twice a year to the community centre. But now it's there every 3.5 months. It has to be at least 90 days between your donations. But they're usually there about 2 weeks after the 90 days. So about 3.5 months, they're back in Letterkenny every 3.5 months, you know. So you can soon build up a few donations, you know.
Yeah, and it's amazing really how it all works and, you know, how we have a certain amount to supply at any given time, and it's not exhaustive. It's only a couple of days potentially, and that's why it's so important that people like you give blood as regularly as you do. Is there a sensation when you're getting it done, or how does it make you feel? Just in case that's what might be what's discouraging people. What does it feel like when you give them blood?
It's when you go on to start with, you do fill in a questionnaire and all, and you can actually go online and fill in that questionnaire to check if you're eligible and to make an appointment as well. You just go on to giveblood.ie and you can make an appointment or you can check your eligibility. But if you go in there to them, they'll get you to fill in this questionnaire as well. And actually, they just give you a wee finger prick to get a drop of blood out of your finger just to check that you're suitable for giving, that your iron's okay and all. Mm. And, you know, it's just a wee prick in the finger, and they test the blood then, and they can tell you right away then if you're okay. And then you wait then until your turn, and you go and they hook you up. And the staff and all is very nice and helpful as well, you know. And if you need anything, or, you know, if you don't feel right or anything, they'll sort you out. But over the years, I haven't seen any problems there, you know, at all, because if you weren't suitable, they wouldn't have you through, you know. So, like, I don't feel any difference at all after giving it. I don't feel any different, you know.
And you get a notification
then. He's the same, you know.
Yeah, and he's already over 10. You get a notification then, do you, all the time or sometimes when your blood is used? And what does that say?
Yeah, see, whenever you actually go in the first time and get registered and all, and they'll send you out a blood card with your blood type and all on it. And you'll get a text then. Every time that they are coming to Letterkenny, they'll send you a text, or your area, say it's Balbuffet or Buncrana or wherever. If you start off in that area, they send you a text then just to let you know. They'll text you a week or so beforehand, so you can go online or you can phone them up and make an appointment then. The appointment thing kind of started during the COVID, because before that you just went in and queued up and got through that way, you know. But since the COVID thing, they like people just to phone up or else go online and make an appointment. But once you get registered the first time, you get your blood card, and then they'll send you that text, you know what I mean, every time. And then whenever you make the donation and all, maybe a week or 10 days or whatever later, when they're sending out that blood then to the hospital, you get a text. They send you a text then to say that your blood has been sent out to whatever hospital all over the country. And it's very nice to get that text, you know, because it can encourage you then as well, you know, for the next time, you know.
Yeah, of course. Listen, it's amazing. The amount of people you've helped is astonishing. We'll never know. But we know it's an awful lot of people. 102 donations, Frank. It's fantastic. Thanks very much for chatting to us. And I'm going to give people the details you've been giving them to be, just as a wrap it up. Go ahead, Frank. You wanted to say something else?
Yeah. But, Greg, whether it's 100 or one, do you know what I mean? Every donation counts. Do you know what I mean? So I'll think as much of the person. I was talking to somebody the last time I was in, and they were giving their first, like, and I said, tell them as it's fair play to you, like, you know, it's a big step to do your first, and you know, every single one counts, you know.
Yeah, so of course it does.
I would encourage people to go and offer. If you're not suitable for it, you know, they won't let you donate. But if you are, you know, and it'd be great to see more young ones going on as well. You know what I mean? When we went on at the start, there was a group of us, maybe six of us, went on together and started off together. And we're all kind of supporting one another, you know. But I just think it's a good thing to do. And I'm going to keep going as long as I can, anyway, you know.
No bother to you, Frank. Listen, thank you so much. And thank you for what you're doing as well. Frank Morning there from Dromahill in Manor Cunningham. He's made 102 blood donations. So if you're interested in joining the thousands of volunteers whose generosity helps ensure that hospitals have a constant supply of blood for surgeries, emergencies and ongoing treatment, you can begin by checking your eligibility through the new donor eligibility quiz on the IBTS website at giveblood.ie. You can then book your first appointment by calling 1-800-731-137. And you can also simply call into the Radisson Hotel. I'll give you the times of when they're in the area, when the transfusion service is next in town. And the transfusion service will be back in Letterkenny, as I mentioned, this month from Monday the 23rd to Thursday the 26th of March. Right, so it's a life-saving situation. There's just no doubt about that. So what's the date today? It's the 24th. So they were in the Radisson yesterday. Today, they're in the Radisson, Letterkenny Radisson Blue Hotel, County Donegal, Paddy Hart Road, from 2:30 to 5:10 in the afternoon, 7 to 9:40 in the evening. And tomorrow, 2:30 to 5:10 in the afternoon, 7 to 9:40 in the evening. And they're in there on Thursday as well. So call in and you can check out your eligibility, get registered, etc. Congratulations, Frank. Well done, says an anonymous listener. Another listener, who's a lady, says, I hope to give my 104th donation tomorrow. This lady says, though, she's missed a good few times because of anemia, but hopefully good to go for tomorrow. 104. Tony just behind her there on, not Tony, sorry, Frank just behind her there on 102. And Frank's own son up over 10 already. A caller says, I gave blood for a good couple of years, and 2 years ago I was told I couldn't anymore because of medication I was on. You have to be truthful when filling out the form as to what medication you're taking. The tablet I'm on can harm unborn babies. And that's good, isn't it, that it has that level of scrutiny. It's disappointing for you and that you're on that tablet, but I suppose it's reassuring that they are quite strict in terms of who can and can't give blood for whatever reasons.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Tuesday, March 24th, 26 minutes past 10. It's time for this week's Community Garda information. And my guest this week is Garda Sean Swinney from Buncrana Garda Station. Sean, thank you so much for calling in.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you with us. Right, we'll get straight into the appeals and start with investigations into a burglary in Letterkenny.
Yes, occurred at a commercial premises in the area of Ballyrain, Letterkenny, the early hours of Tuesday, 17th of March, between approximately 4:45 a.m. and 5 a.m. Silver Toyota Auris arrived at that location with four males on board, two who then entered the building. Number of windows and internal doors were damaged, and during the course, a substantial amount of cash was stolen from the office. It's believed the Auris may have travelled in the direction of the Kiltoy roundabout following the burglary, and the lights on it may have been turned off at times. So our appeal is anybody travelling those areas or the surrounding areas between 4:30 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. who may have dashcam footage to make it available. Or if you've observed any vehicle or any type of suspicious activity in the area, you can call Letterkenny on 916-71100 or the confidential line 1800-666-111.
Some good information in there. Hopefully it's helpful for witnesses. Now, a criminal damage incident in the south of the county, Bundoran.
Yes, occurred at business premises in the area of East End, Bundoran, between approximately 10 p.m. and 10:15 p.m. on Tuesday, 17th March again. Front window of the premises smashed between those times. No entries gained. So our appeal is to motorists who are in that general area who have dashcam footage between 10 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. to make it available, or if any relevant information can be passed on to Gardaí and Ballyshannon on 98585530.
All right. Now, it's thefts of or from cars. We'll start with the theft of a car in Letterkenny. That's very recent, in fact.
Yeah. So this occurred in Wilmill View area of Letterkenny on Monday, 23rd of March at approximately 9 p.m. A blue Hyundai Amica with a partial registration of 07DL129 was loaded onto a white car transporter tow truck, which possibly had red writing on the side by two men and taken from the area. So our appeal is anybody who's in that area with dashcam footage between 8:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. make it available. Or if you observed this car transporter or can offer any relevant information, contact Letterkenny Gardaí, please.
And that was just yesterday. Right, theft from a car in Buncrana. This was an attempted theft?
Yeah, so this occurred at St Mary's Road car park in Buncrana at approximately 4:40 a.m. on Tuesday 17th. A number of male youths were observed searching through an unlocked park vehicle at location. Nothing's believed to be stolen, but our appeal is again for dashcam footage from motorists, or if you have any relevant information, to contact Gardaí in Buncrana.
Right, now we're moving to Curravaddy Woods. This was a couple of instances, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So looking for witnesses, a theft, an attempted theft, it occurred at Listhack, Letterkenny, on Friday the 20th of March, between approximately 5:45 p.m. and 6 p.m. So two cars are parked there at the car park at Curravaddy Woods. They were broken into, both cars were entered and the windows were smashed. Nothing was stolen from one of the cars, but a number was stolen from the other, namely a grey blue cord bag containing perfume, a small navy cloth zip coin purse that had a bank card and cash, a makeup bag, a mobile phone, a black cases, glasses case and glasses, and a silver Schaefer fountain pen with the initials ED on it, engraved on it. This pen in particular holds sentimental value, and we're particularly anxious to retrieve it for the owner. And mobile phone was later found along the roadside. So our appeal is anybody in that area with dashcam footage between 5 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. on the evening of March the 20th, make it available. Or if you need relevant information, you can contact Gardaí and Letterkenny or the confidential line again.
And it also does serve as a reminder, doesn't it, to ensure our cars are locked wherever we happen to park them, but also to ensure that there's nothing on show that might attract the attention of these criminals.
Yeah, absolutely. Just put it in the way, lock it or take it with you, because it's just enticing them to try and make the effort.
Yeah, OK. And you could be the eyes and the ears of the community out there as well. If you see anything untoward happening around these vehicles, please get in touch with the Gardaí. Now, a case of trespassing in Trenta.
Yeah, this occurred at a house in the area of Socar in Trenta, Letterkenny, shortly after 2:20 a.m. on Wednesday, the 18th of March. So a notification was received from external CCTV taking place outside the house. It was then established there was a man on the grounds of the house. He was wearing dark clothing and had a balaclava on. Nothing was stolen from the property. So our appeal is anybody who observed any type of suspicious activity, vehicles or persons on foot in that area, to get in touch with Gardaí in Milford. We're particularly interested in hearing from anybody who travelled in that area who may have gained dashcam footage, or if you have any relevant information, you can use the confidential line again.
Yeah, OK. Now, road traffic collision being investigated in Pettigo. Again, this is a recent event.
Yeah, so two vehicles occurred on the R232 in the area of Drumgon in Pettigo Monday the 23rd of March, shortly after 9 p.m. One vehicle travelling from Pettigo towards Lahey and the other was travelling the opposite direction, and the collision occurred. The two drivers were taken to Sligo University Hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. There were no passengers, so our appeal is anybody who may have witnessed the collision or if anybody travelled the area who may have dashcam footage to make it available to Gardaí and Ballyshannon.
All right, and a road traffic collision being investigated in the Muff area.
Yeah, this occurred between 7 p.m. on Saturday the 14th of March and 1 p.m. on Sunday the 15th of March at Carnamoyle and Muff. The vehicle is believed to be a black Peugeot, collided with the fence of a house, and extensive damage was caused. So we're looking for anybody who may have any information in relation to this. Please contact Gardaí and Buchanan.
All right. Now, Gardaí dealing with some reports of bogus callers, and this is something that comes up from time to time, but the good thing about this item is when it's happening or there's instances, mm-hmm. we can talk about it almost straight away, right? So people can know. So what's happening?
So there's bogus callers around the Donegal town area in recent days. They're often the clean gutters and we're advertising a variety of other services such as tarmacking, landscaping, building work. They also offer goods for sale such as tools or generators. We advise people not to engage with them. They often target the vulnerable and those who live alone. So our advice, don't open your door unless you're confident you know who they are or they're legitimate. Use a chain lock for added security, especially older generation. These calls have been quite intimidating and often refuse to take no for an answer. So contact Gardaí immediately, you know, if they're in your area. Even if they do convince you and you're still not happy, you can still call us, you know, go to another room and call us. We can call out then and investigate what's going on. Get as much information as you can, possible description of the people, how many there are, registration number, direction of travel. Just look out for your neighbours because they are targeting the vulnerable and the elderly. Yeah. And keep in mind that they pop up in any area in Donegal.
Yeah, exactly. Very mobile. And as soon as you start to engage, that's when their skills can kick in terms of convincing you that this needs done or that needs done or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you so much, Sean. I really appreciate it. That was Garda Sean Sweeney for this week's Community Garda Information. Back with you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. We're joined on the programme now by Dave Hannah. Good morning to you, Dave. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Roy Keane has had a huge impact on Ireland, hasn't he? More so perhaps maybe than any other sports person when you take in all of his influences in different areas.
Absolutely. I think like he's been in the public eye now for nearly four decades. He started off as this like teenage wonder kid at Nottingham Forest, and now he's this grey-bearded influencer who pops up on our television screens or on our phones when he goes viral. So he's had several different iterations along the way. He's like, as I said, he's one part national treasure, one part national argument, you know, because he's a divisive figure still. You know, people still argue a lot about him. And it's kind of always been like that over the four decades that he has been in the public eye.
Yeah, but he is who he is. He sticks to his guns. That's who he is.
Absolutely, and that's why people love him, and that's why his brand, for want of a better word, remains so relevant, that he does speak his mind. He does call people out. I think as Irish people, we love when he's on English television and he is a little bit snarkier and a little bit more cynical and critical and honest than some of the English pundits. You know, I think we take great pride in that when he's kind of, you know, speaking truths to power.
You talk of the Keenification of Ireland. It's a concept, really, I suppose, that's teased out in the book. What does it mean to you?
It means that over the course of his career, he changed Ireland, and you know he forced Ireland to change itself. And this manifests itself in different ways. You know, rugby, for instance. Rugby is the sport Roy Keane never played. Rugby didn't exist in working class Cork. I was there in the 70s and 80s. Rugby wasn't a sport for us. And yet, if you go through the autobiographies of the greatest generation of Irish rugby players, the most successful rugby players ever in Ireland, all of them paid tribute to Roy Keane and how he affected them and how he forced them into realising that they did not have to accept second best, that they could compete on the biggest stage and they could drive themselves and aspire to more. So that's just one example of one sport, a sport he never played, that was never there for him, and yet he actually transformed the mentality of so many in that game.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, but I get the impression, and you would know better than I, that his work ethic and commitment has been normalised now. But when he was earlier in his career or throughout his career, he must have been very frustrated looking around a dressing room where people didn't seem to care or commit or try as hard as he was.
Absolutely. He drove standards at Manchester United, you know, which was the most successful club in the world, perhaps, at the time when he was at his peak. He drove standards. He demanded, you know, he demanded more effort from people there. And then with Ireland, obviously, there was that exact same argument where he felt not only were some of the players not on the same page as him, but the FAI and those people running the game in Ireland and running the national team were not actually, you know, didn't aspire to the greatness that he thought was possible for the team at that time.
Now, in this book, you track his life. So anyone who's a Roy Keane fan, football fan, or just likes reading, I sometimes speak to people who some of their favourite books are on topics they don't have any interest in at all. It just can be a good story, right? But you trace his life from being a young, callow lad right up to where he's at now.
Yeah, I basically, because what I loved about his life story was that it kind of traces the arc of Irish history in the last 50 years. I mean, he was born in Cork in 1971, and I was born in Cork in 1971. And when I researched that year in Cork, I couldn't believe how grim and dark things were. Like, there was an ad in the newspaper the week that Roy Keane was born, there was an ad for a job in a shoe factory in Cork, and it was for 11 to 15-year-old girls. It was a full-time job with great prospects. That's what they had said, with great prospects. And I was stunned to see, like, 11-year-old girl, full-time job. And that was kind of a poverty-stricken, you know, backward Ireland of 1971, and now you see what Ireland is today. And his life kind of traces that evolution, if you like. Mm. He causes some of that evolution, and then now he represents this new kind of bolder, brash, more self-confident Ireland and richer and more affluent Ireland, at least for some.
You also draw a comparison between he and Christy Ring. How did that grab you?
Well, Christy Ring obviously is one of our gods in Cork. He's one of the ones you're brought up worshipping when you grow up in Cork. But when you when you read about Christy Ring, you discover that he was, you know, there's a story in the book of him and Brown Don O'Hare, the famous journalist, walking down the streets of Cork, and a bunch of lads start mocking Christy Ring because of an incident in a game the previous weekend. And Ring felt that some people in Cork only wanted him locked up during the week and only let out to play matches for Cork at the weekend. And you could see with Keane, there was a little bit of that people were like, he's so narky, he's so truculent. But we want him on the field, you know. We want him on the field when things matter most. We want him out there for us.
Saipan is very familiar to everyone. Lots of people have written about it. It's been immortalised in film more recently. What did you want to bring to the Saipan conversation?
Well, that was to try to bring anything new to that conversation is very, very difficult, as you say.
But you couldn't ignore it either.
No, you couldn't ignore it. It's this incredible moment in Irish history, not like Irish sporting history. I guess what I wanted to do in the chapter was touch upon, like, I live in New York and I teach history over here, and Saipan here means one of the most, you know, traumatic, bloody episodes of World War II. In Ireland, it means something completely different. So I guess I wanted to trace how Ireland collectively lost its mind in the summer of 2002. And it was fascinating to go back there and to see how demented we became and how sport really has that capacity in Ireland to drive us nuts. You know, we do lose ourselves over everything, Gaelic football, hurling, soccer, even rugby. You know, people really, really, I think we react in an over-the-top way that shows how sport matters to us. So there was a lot of that I wanted to see that. And I also, you know, revisited I covered the first half of the Roy Keane, Mick McCarthy relationship when I lived in Dublin. I worked as a journalist with the Sunday Tribune. And, you know, you could see this was always simmering and the FAI just left this fester for years. And of course, like a family feud that suddenly explodes at a wedding or a funeral, this has to happen at, like, the most seismic moment in our recent sporting history.
And Roy Keane is one of the few people in sport, I think it's few, people might struggle to come up with a dozen, of people that transcend their sport or cross over or break out into it, that their fame outside of the sport is as great within it. You know, sometimes you see it in boxing, sometimes in football. I think people can, maybe it's easier to come up with a few footballers' names or what have you. But I think in terms of a footballer that's not glamorous, right? Because obviously the likes of Ronaldo springs to mind, or Beckham, right? But Roy Keane has that same sort of notoriety, even for people outside of the sport, but it's for different reasons. It's not because of what way he's cut his hair or who he's going out with as such.
No, he has transcended the sport. And I think that's there wouldn't be any point in this book if he didn't, because he is bigger than his football career now. In fact, there's people, young people, who don't remember the footballer. Like, he's been retired for 20 years. They have no memory of this great, great player. But I think what happened to him was, he became, you know, he became a star, a football star at Manchester United when Manchester United were taking off in the 90s, when Sky Sports suddenly, you know, glorified and hyped up the game in England and forced everybody to take more notice of it. And also when Ireland became a more tabloid nation in the 90s. So Roy Keane was on the front page. You know, it wasn't just like, we've had great players, obviously, in the past, and hopefully we will again. But he was, you know, he was on the front page for a long time, as often as he was on the back page, because, you know, he was a young man living his life, partying a little too much. So his celebrity grew in accordance with that.
Yeah. And one thing I hadn't really observed myself, though everyone would be aware of it, is how he has, you know, brought phrases or terminology or descriptive language into, you know, everyday use, effectively. The prawn sandwiches, for an example. You hear that really quite regularly still.
Yeah. And again, I think the Roy Keane world superstar of today was kind of born back then when he gave, you know, the prawn sandwich comment that suddenly became the prawn sandwich brigade and became a kind of very important phrase in discussing the woes of modern sport and how, like, it's being corporatized.
Yeah, but that really would have resonated with the fans, you know, the your everyday working class, a phrase I don't really like, but it seems to be the way it's described, you know, paying hundreds upon hundreds to try and go and support the team. And then you've got this other crew who were up in the fancy boxes eating their prawn sandwiches.
He had a very good knack in his playing career for saying things. Honestly, I think he meant these things that actually appealed to the hardcore supporters. I remember a United fanzine editor once said to me, you know, Beckham sells the bedspreads, but Roy Keane is our man. You know, like Beckham was the commercial powerhouse, obviously, but he says, you know, we know that Roy Keane is the most important player and he speaks for us. And he knows what matters really beyond all the commerce and all the hype and all the exaggeration.
One thing about him is there's a self-awareness, and you can see that in some of the adverts that he's signed up for, whereby he knows how he's perceived out there, right? But he's still taking that corporate cash. I wonder, I'd be very interested, I haven't heard him being interviewed or that being discussed with him on it, but what do you think of that self-awareness and the monetization of brand Keane? Doesn't feel very brand Keane, right?
Yeah, it seems off-brand for brand Keane to be selling himself, you know, for Sky, to be used by Sky and Adidas and major corporations like that. I think Keane realised he didn't speak that often to the media in his playing career. And when he did give interviews, usually every year he'd come to Dublin and speak, give an interview when promoting the Guide Dogs, which he was a charity that he's done incredible work for in Ireland. And he would come and give an interview, and that interview would resonate for days in the media, you know. And I think he realised then the power he had. And during his career, he turned down a lot of commercial opportunities. He was very focused, much more focused on his playing career than, you know, cashing in the way some others, perhaps like Beckham, were. And now you can see he's willing to cash in on everything, even the, you know, the mobile phone incident, the famous incident at Ipswich where the mobile phone went off at the press conference. Like, he's done an ad where he's the journalist in the mobile phone with the mobile phone going off. You know, he's sending himself up, but he's also, you know, cashing in on his own notoriety.
Yeah,
fair play to him.
Finally, do you know what, or can you guess what Roy Keane might think of this book?
I don't think he'd like it. I don't think he likes people writing about him producing stuff about him. I would say he absolutely hates the Saipan movie. I'm sure he hates, he would hate this book. I'm under no illusions about that.
Okay, and the book is out now, is that right, Dave? We need to talk about Roy, and available in all the usual spots, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. Available Brilliant. Everywhere.
Okay, well done. A fantastic achievement to write anything, I think, but to get it all put together and published. Brilliant stuff. Well done, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Bye-bye. Dave Hannigan there, joining us from New York. He's author of We Need to Talk About Roy. And Roy Keane is incredibly, incredibly popular, of course. Now, we read that criminals have infested so-called internet dodgy box TV systems with malware to steal Irish users' data. Professor Kevin Curran is Professor of Cybersecurity at Ulster University, and he joins me on the programme now. Professor, good morning to you. Nice to speak to you again.
Morning, Greg.
I suppose, listen, lots and lots of people use so-called dodgy boxes. They know what they're doing, right? There's plenty of information out there to know that it's illegal. So they know they're doing business with criminals. So it's not a big leap then, I suppose, that perhaps these criminals might look at other ways of monetarising their customers, if I could describe them as such.
Exactly. These boxes give you basically free pirated content from sports to entertainment. The problem is that they are generally released by organized crime. And what they really want is to use your network, perform either denial of service attacks or just scanning of other people's computers. So basically they're using your home network launching point for attacks on other computers and systems around the world.
And of course, you know, sometimes people are asked to make changes to their router, their security, or to open ports here, there, or whatever it might be. Some of that can be automated as well. It's not hard to see, is it, even for someone like myself, who's not an expert, how this can become a front door into your network and every connected device on it.
Yes, indeed, because even if you were to update these, the firmware, the malware itself is rooted at the lowest level. So even if you try to reformat the device and clean it, it's still, the malware remains. So you can never work with this device. Now, one thing I would make clear is if you have a compromised device like this in your network, and it is part of the botnet, that it can spy on your traffic on your devices again. So thank goodness we have encryption. So even if you open the bank, because a lot of the reporting gets this wrong, even if you opened your bank account on your local network again, it's encrypted. They could see that device A is talking to device B. They can even see maybe metadata that you're connected to your bank. But encryption, end-to-end, it protects us. So they can only see gobbledygook. So the main danger, of course, is that your traffic, you know, you're paying for their traffic, that your network will slow down. Again, you could be blocked by your ISP. You could find, you know, because you're part of a botnet, really, and they think that you're spamming. You know, it's not so much that it'll pivot on the network and go to your light bulb and spy on you. But what I would say, the one thing for people who are a bit paranoid or very sensitive is, if you have cameras, home cameras, or even a camera on your smart TV, or a camera on modern vacuums, robot vacuums again, they can be hacked into, because that device literally is listening on a port. So hackers could get into your network and spy on you. Now, that's more common than your traffic being sniffed. So it depends on where you lie in the sensitivity scale again, that, you know, we've seen this. So that's mainly the one thing is, you know, they're using your traffic to spam other things. Again, you could get banned, or at least your ISP could slow down your traffic. Mm. But also your cameras could allow people to watch you again. And people never think it was a smart TV, but all smart TVs now have cameras again. And increasingly the robot vacuums, which I think the robot vacuums are one of the greatest technology inventions. You know, they come now with little mops. They're not that expensive, and they just work all the time. And they generally clean out their dust bag themselves. And I do actually believe that they're great.
Me too.
A great addition to any house, especially if your floor is not cluttered. Oh. It really does do your mopping for you.
I can't believe we've ended up talking about robot vacuums, but I actually also am a big fan of those. But as you say, some of them have cameras, and maybe that's a more practical way that these people could be exploited. Professor Kevin Corrin, thank you very much indeed for your time. I really do appreciate it. So just be cautious. Right, that's where we leave it on the show today. Thank you so much to all of you who listened or watched the programme or who got involved or just listened. It doesn't matter. We love your contacts, but it's not essential if you choose not to. We'll be back to do it all again with you tomorrow morning from 9.